Welcome to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. This is a podcast that will make you want to get outdoors and will give you some great ideas as a sport parent, athlete, or coach. Born in the beautiful mountain town of Steamboat Springs, Colorado, the Winter Sports Club was founded over a century ago and now serves a majority of kids in our community and has produced more Winter Olympians than any other club in North America. There are secrets and great stories to share as we play year-round in these mountains we call home. Our calling is to develop complete athletes on and off the mountain by cultivating a passion for the outdoors and a love of sports at all levels. Stay tuned to hear from Olympians, athletes of all ages, coaches, experts, and people who are doing amazing things to make an impact in our community and in their sport.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Nicole DeBoom. I'm a former professional triathlete who finally discovered the joys of skiing in my late 40s when I moved to Steamboat Springs with my family. We immediately discovered the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club, and it's become a huge part of our lives as my husband, Tim DeBoom, is a ski and bike coach, and my daughter, Wilder, has found happiness, friendship, and joy through skiing, jumping, riding, and more. I am thrilled to bring the positive energy of the Winter Sports Club to people all over the world. Thanks for listening. Now let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. We have a treat for you today. I'm interviewing a two-time Olympian, Jasper Good. He is actually one of the athletes that made me want to do the show. So when we had moved here, they had a special showcase for all the Olympians who were getting ready for the 2022 Olympics. And I stood there watching everybody like go up on stage at Howelson. And I was just thinking, oh my gosh, I want to interview every single athlete who's ever come out of Steamboat. So Jasper, you were one of them. Jasper is a, as I mentioned, a two-time Olympian. He is a hometown hero and an all-around great guy. Jasper, thanks for taking some time with me today.
Of course, thanks for having me.
You know, we're doing this via Zoom because you don't live in Steamboat right now. So why don't we just start off by telling everyone where you are?
I'm actually in Salt Lake City now. I moved out to Utah when I got named to the national team right after high school, and I've lived in Utah ever since, actually.
So we'll get back to like what's happened after sport here in the most recent year or two. Yeah. But actually, as you say that, you got named to the team right after high school. So does that mean that sport became your college?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I did the sport route when all my friends did the college route.
You know, I'm going to go back in time. Let's talk about how you found Nordic Combined. It's not a mainstream sport. Like if you were just talking to somebody in Kentucky and you were like, yeah, I'm an Olympic Nordic combined athlete, they'd be like, what the hell is that? So I'm pretty interested in your origin story. What drew you to this sport?
So as I was actually born and raised in Steamboat. So like most kids born and raised in Steamboat, I started skiing in the backyard pretty young. And then I got into the Winter Sports Club when I was 9. And my dad had a background in moguls and coaching that. So the programs we chose, we were thinking he could teach me how to mogul ski, but he was like, you got to do alpine skiing so you're a good skier. And then you can't grow up in Steamboat. And like, I lived downtown growing up. And we were like, you can't grow up downtown and like walk out your front door and see the ski jumps and have never tried it. So like that's how I'd started with Alpine and Nordic Combined and was like, all right, we've got to try it. And then a couple years down the road, decided that I wanted to just do Nordic Combined and was pretty much hooked ever since.
Okay, so some people listening actually may not even know what Nordic Combined is. Will you explain that?
Yeah. Nordic Combined is a combination of Nordic ski jumping, which is the distance one. And then it's a combination of that and cross-country skiing. So like, on a competition day, we have different formats now, but in a basic sense, there's a jumping competition in the morning, say, and whoever goes the farthest starts the cross country race first. And then based on how much shorter you went than the leader, you're at a time deficit to start the cross country race. And whoever crosses the line first wins.
So it's like a staggered start.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the pressure's on. So
a couple minutes behind.
Did you always do you want to be the far? Of course, you want to have the farthest jump, but like, were you good out front or did you like the chase?
I definitely kind of fluctuated. I was never like the best jumper. But like, definitely, I mean, it's such a balance because it's a sport with two very different sports in it. So it's kind of like this weird happy medium you have to play with, like, playing to your strengths on the jumping side versus like it's a give and take kind of thing. So it would kind of fluctuate year to year and even like month to month sometimes. But I honestly think that both being out in front is pretty fun and like being part of the chase, like tactically, it's all very fun.
Well, and that makes you an all around threat because if you don't have a great jump, you could still win. And if you have a great jump, the people behind you have a lot of work to do. So, you know, we've never talked about this on any episode so far, but in order to combine, like you just mentioned, two very different sports. So I'm thinking about body types, right? And what it would take to be the very best jumper. And then what kind of body it ideally takes to be the very best at cross country. Can you explain like, how those conflict and how you manage that?
Yeah, that was something that I think every Nordic combined athlete in the world, especially at the high level, is like constantly tweaking and like trying to figure out their sweet spot. Because as a ski jumper, the lighter you are, the farther you fly. And you need to be like pretty quick twitch and have like a pretty good vert. So like, the muscle groups that you're training for ski jumping are super specific and you're not trying to put any extra mass on. And then on the cross country side of things, like obviously you need a like huge endurance base to be good at that. And finding that like happy medium of like overall strength to be good enough to cross country ski at that level, because it is at like extremely high level and fast paced, but you can't like have any extra. So like finding that fine tuning of like what muscle groups I need to be training in order to be good at both of these is definitely it creates a lot of like very lean endurance athletes, I would say.
Yeah. You know, I do relate to that coming from a triathlon background because cyclists have like no upper body. They're all legs, but runners generally are skinny as can be.
Yep.
So yeah, you're kind of fighting against yourself, which has to make this one of the most challenging sports, both physically and mentally.
Yeah, except, yep, definitely.
Totally. Well, let's go back even to when you were a kid before you specialized. So you were like, okay, your dad, Jeff, right? Yeah. He was an elite mogul skier.
He competed for a couple years on the team, and then he actually had a longer tenure as a coach. He was a head coach of the mogul ski team for, I don't know how many years, but three Olympics.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he knew what he was doing there. And it's funny because you didn't become a mogul skier.
Yeah. No, everyone gives a shit about that.
But it sounds like this was a family thing too. So you have a sister as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And she went the alpine route growing up, but like family ski days and like, everything in life that revolves around skiing, as most of Steamboat does, is definitely a priority for our family. So I like definitely fell in love with the sport via that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when you were younger, did you do other sports in the summer or even during ski season?
Yeah, I actually played soccer all through high school.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
Like at a pretty competitive level?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I was on the club team the whole time. And then in high school, I got onto varsity like a little bit my sophomore year. And then my junior and senior year, I was on varsity.
Okay, cool. And were you like a little rug rat running around causing like local issues here? Like I interviewed Decker. who I'm sure you're friends with. And he's like, yeah, you know those kids in the river who tell the tourists to lean back? Yeah, that was me. We were tipping them right and left. Yeah, were you playing in that crowd?
A little bit, yeah. Decker and I, like, he learned a lot from me. He was, like, a couple years younger than me. So we, like, always got along pretty well because we played the same. He played soccer, too, growing up for a while. So we, like, had all the same interests and definitely ran in the same circles. So it was, like, I don't know. It's Steamboat, so, like, it's all in good fun. But it's definitely a great community to grow up in.
I mean, did you feel like as a kid you were hyper-focused at a certain point, or did you always have a pretty nice balance mentally?
I think it would kind of fluctuate. Like, I wasn't, like, 100% committed to a career in skiing until after high school, actually. I, like, wanted to keep my options open, and, like, obviously I loved Nordic Combine. But, like, it takes a lot to be at that level, and you have to, like, achieve a certain amount of, like, success in order to even make it possible. So I didn't, like, want to put all my eggs in one basket. And at the same time, like, I love playing soccer. Like, I still do. So I didn't, like, want to completely sacrifice, like, other aspects of my life. So I think, I mean, Steamboat's one of those towns where any kid can pretty much play any sport. Like, granted, we're not going to be as good at, like, the traditional American sports as most towns, but, like, every kid can do any sport they want, essentially, within reason. But, like, I think it's pretty easy to balance it. And as much as, like, some coaches would, like, be frustrated when I would be at the other sport when the, like, one is happening, they were, like, good at working with me and making things work. And yeah, I think they did a good job of, like, trying to encourage their sport, but, like, understand that kids in Steamboat play a couple sports.
You know, let's talk about the club, because obviously this is the SSWSC show, and it sounds like it was a really big part of your life. How about you just share some insight on what the club meant to you and still means to you?
The Winter Sports Club means an incredible amount to me. I would attribute, honestly, the vast majority of my love for skiing to the Winter Sports Club. Like, weekday nights between 4 and 6, like, that is why I am in love with skiing and will be for the rest of my life, because, like, I don't remember anything from the school day before. Like, I don't have a super good memory of my childhood, but, like, I don't remember a single thing from, like, what I used to do during the day at school. But I have, like, very vivid memories of, like, even going to Winter Sports Club afterwards with my friends, and, like, the stuff that we would do in terms of, like, training, or the days where, like, we weren't exactly being the most productive. Like, you're still out in the snow and, like, falling in love with the skiing and the community aspect of it. And I think that is an incredibly special thing that I didn't realize for a long time until I left and came back and was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
You know, I talked to a few people. I told them I was going to interview you and asked if they had any questions. And one of them said, I wonder what it feels like after an athlete like Jasper goes and trains somewhere else and travels the world and comes back here and trains again. Like, what does that feel like?
It's like it's kind of like a little bit of nostalgia, but also like it brings back the fun. Like, every time I would go back to Steam, but we would always come back for, I don't know if you've seen the, like, little 4th of July competitions.
Oh, yeah.
Done, yeah. So I'd, like, always know I'd be coming back for that pretty much every year. And it definitely just, like, reintroduces some, like, fun into everything, because, like, that's just the culture, I think, that's in Steamboat. And I think that's extremely helpful for, at least it was for me, like, having grown up in Steamboat. I can't necessarily speak to my teammates from other towns, but, like, at the professional level and, like, the top level of sport, it definitely, like, drags you down a little bit sometimes. And it's, like, so, so structured and focused that, like, sometimes you lose sight of the fun of it, which is where, like, the drive for me came from. And, like, bringing it back to the basics and remembering, like, why I love the sport, that's what Steamboat usually reminded me of.
Yeah, so you come back. Isn't it Jumping and Jamming? Is that for July 4th? Are you coming this year again?
I don't know if I'll be able to make it this year, actually. I'm I have some career changes that might hinder that.
All right, we're going to get there. This is actually really funny because right behind me, like our house, my back is facing our alley. So you're looking at my alley right now, and looking through the window in the other house is Sawyer Graves' house.
Okay.
And Sawyer won Jumpin' and Jammin' a couple years ago. And he's young, and you've been there with like the ups and downs and roller coaster of a career. And I'm just curious, like I'm just sitting here like feeling legacy. I'm feeling the legacy as we're speaking, going, yeah, you were there, you've done it, and you passing torches is important. You know, I usually ask a question like this towards the end, but what kind of advice do you have for Sawyer in particular, for other kids like him that are thinking maybe there's a shot?
Yeah. That's funny that Sawyer's behind you. It's the same thing with like me to Decker, then Decker to Sawyer. Like I remember at Jumpin' and Jammin' a couple, like when Sawyer first popped on to the jumps, and like I always thought it was the coolest thing ever when like some young kid would show up and like give me a run for our money, like, and like challenge us. Cause I definitely remember years I was like, cause Decker and I would always end up like duking it out at the end of that competition. And we both looked at each other like, dude, this kid's gonna beat us. Like, we gotta stop. Which that's a little tangent. But as far as like advice for younger kids who are like on a track that could bring them to the high level of sport, I would say like absolutely, like let yourself enjoy that and like take the time to truly find out if that's what you want to do. Like in the grand scheme of things, taking a year off of college, not a big deal. Taking a couple years off of college, still not a big deal. Like you're only going to be able to do this once, so like see it through. If you truly enjoy it, it'll mean a lot to you, but like definitely remember why you love doing it and why you're doing it. Don't like get sucked into the the like dullness of it, I guess, or like the strict cut and dry. Like it is inherently fun, so definitely remember that.
That's really great advice. I mean, for any athlete, you know, because burnout becomes a thing. And when you discover a sport pretty young that puts you on a little bit of a specialization track, burnout can happen like before you have a chance to even hit your peak. Did you experience any of those early cycles?
Yeah, I went through a couple burnout periods. I definitely experienced that a lot. And like I said, taking some time away from this sport specifically and just like refining my love for sport and skiing in general and like the enjoyment in that is what always brought me back out of those cycles.
How did you know, like looking back, because this is kind of important, you often don't know you're burned out until you absolutely hit it. So were there any signs or anything you can help people identify that says like, oh, be careful right now because you're about to enter the burnout zone?
Yeah, it's really hard because like I definitely hit like both physical and mental burnouts at points in my career. And I think on the physical side of like both physically and mentally, looking back at it, I would say that when you notice yourself like dreading the next training session or the next competition session, or like if you only look forward to like very few types of training sessions, like when it doesn't seem worth it, or it's like starting to feel that way, you're on the track for that and maybe need to like recalibrate a little bit.
And how do you recalibrate?
I'm not saying that like every training session is enjoyable, because like I definitely wasn't the biggest fan of everything in the gym that we did, but like I understood that we needed to do it, and because of that I absolutely took part in it. But like if there's a difference between like doing something that's necessary and still like finding the drive to like go in and get it done versus like absolutely dreading what you have to go do.
Yeah, I think that, and that makes total sense. I mean, you know, once you hit that level, it is a bit like a job. And so you don't always love every part of your job, but you know that the pieces you've got to put the work in to get the result. But when you realize, like, say you realize, God, I've been dreading practice for the last 3 or 4 weeks in a row, and I haven't had any practices I look forward to. How, like, what do these kids do? Do they stop and talk to their coach? Do they talk to their parents? Do they just say, I need to take like a break? What if the timing's bad? Like, how do you stop and recalibrate?
I think that, like, I don't know when they introduced sports psychology into the Winter Sports Club's curriculum, but I think that that is something that, like, changed the game for me on multiple occasions and throughout my entire career. And I think, like, having a sports psychologist in your corner, or, like, I viewed a lot of my career as, like, I had to assemble, like, my team, kind of. And what I mean by that is, like, my coaches and mentors and stuff like that. Like, they're the people that got me where I went. Sports psychologist was for sure one of those people that, like, they're the one that help you recalibrate. Obviously, if you're close enough with your coach and you have that like connection, then yeah, your coach can 100% help, and they're going to be the one that helps you as far as training goes. If you come to them and you're like, look, man, like, I can't do this. Like, this is, I'm on the wrong track. They're the one who's going to, like, help you recalibrate, like, your training so that you can go recalibrate and then get back to training or competing, wherever you're at. See?
You know, I think you brought something up that's really special to the club too, is that we have a performance, a mental health performance coach. I forget what they call Luke, but did you talk to Luke Brosterhaus while he was here? He's been on the show too, and he's amazing. And so few clubs have that resource. So I appreciate that you brought it up. Can you give any tips that he or anyone else on your team gave you that you think have stuck with you throughout your career?
Yeah, I think, like, I think I remember when Luke actually started with the club, but or at least in that role. But I would definitely say, like, don't view it as, when I was younger, I definitely didn't, like, see the benefit of it. And as I got later on in my career, I definitely understood how important your mind is in performance, especially in a sport like ski jumping, where it all had, like, the important part happens in a millisecond. So, like, you got to be on point to execute. And at the same time, there's also, like, that side of sports psychology. And then there's also, like, how do you, like, remain the side of, like, how do you not get sucked into a hole, and, like, how do you stay, like, happy throughout your career, kind of thing. I think, like, being able to work with a sports psychologist is a super, super good way to, like, figure that out.
Well, because I think what you're kind of referring to, like, the big picture long-term view and then the daily grind.
Yep.
And those are going to compete against themselves too. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. You know, let's talk a little bit about your Olympic track.
Okay.
You said, you know, you finished high school and you were like, all right, it's go time. I'm doing this thing. I'm not doing college. I'm going to pursue this. Just kind of share your story from that point.
Okay, so I deferred from college 1 year after high school and was like, all right, this is, I'm gonna, like, give it a go, like, give it a test and see if this is what I want to do. And I, based on my results that year, got named to the national team. So I moved to Utah to, like, be part of the national team, like, one spring after I graduated high school. And then from there, I just, like, the wide-eyed rookie on the team who is just, like, whatever the coach tells me and the older guys are saying, like, that's what I'm going to do. And I definitely came a long way from that before I made the Olympic team. But I definitely had, like, my fair share of, like, growing pains and, like, figuring out how to be on the national team. And, like, there's no handle, like, it's your career and you're all adults and your coach is, like, obviously in your corner and absolutely is, but, like, at the same time, like, you got to figure it out for yourself. And I think that was a little bit of a learning curve, and, like, learning to use my mentors and my coaches and my team was a huge plus. But the first couple years of the team were, like, pretty decent upward trends. And then the year prior to the 2018 Olympics, the 2017 team, I, like, through 2017 season, I, like, just missed the world championship team, which was kind of like a big reality check for me. It's not just, like, upward curve that goes straight to the Olympics without any setbacks. So that one was like a really good reset for me, and definitely like changed how I went into that next year in terms of motivation and what I was willing to do. And then with everything that worked through that, I made my first Olympic team in 2018, which was really special because, like, obviously our team is fairly small in terms of national teams. Like, there's only 8 of us on the team. So, like, going to the Olympics with all of your best friends is, like, one of the most amazing things. And I don't know if you've had Ben Barron on your podcast yet, but he'd be a great one, too. We grew up literally around the block from each other and went to 2018 together. So, like, that was incredibly cool because we've been best friends pretty much forever. That was an incredible experience. Like, got the full thing. My family was able to come and, like, definitely understood more of, like, how much of a grind the Olympic year is, both like in selections and like the whole training year. Like, you got to be on point most of the year, and how rewarding that is when it does happen. And then after that year, I like did a little bit of, as most national team athletes do after the Olympics, a little bit of a reassess and like, do I want to keep skiing? Like, where does this line up with what I want to do in my life? And at the time, I got introduced from one of my coaches to this program that's part of the Army. It's called the U.S. Army's World Class Athlete Program, or WCAP for short. And it's essentially a team for Olympic level athletes who are also serving their country. And essentially, your job in the military is to compete in your sport and represent the U.S. Army in that sense. It's a big like morale booster and PR tool for the Army. So I got introduced to that, and then my teammate and I, Ben Loomis, enlisted when we were in 2019, spring of 2019.
Did you need to enlist in order to do the program?
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to be in the Army. So like, we went to basic training. We got like job training, that summer of 2019 together. And then,
Wait, what was that like? Were you guys like star athletes, or were your egos kind of crushed a little during basic training?
No, it was, we did quite well, I would say, on the athletic side of things. We definitely they definitely like to try and scare you a lot. And we tried to like keep it on the DL for a long time, that like we knew each other and that we'd like been to the Olympics together. And then, of course, like they found out, and after that, they would definitely like give us a little bit of an extra hard time. But like, I think they also respected us because of the level that we'd been at, which we both enjoyed that. But it was an interesting experience. I definitely learned a lot about myself, and I'm really glad I did that because it definitely changed the way my career progressed after that. Being part of that. Like, so we enlisted that summer, and then later that early winter 2019, we got into the world-class athlete program. Cause it's not like you're guaranteed, like you got to enlist, get a job in the Army, and then you like put in this application packet. We got accepted in December of 2019. So that year was like a little bit of a road bump in terms of like progression, both like skill set wise and on that side of things, because we took like a little over four months off of training, which is large in that level of sport. And then after that, like getting a full-time, like the amount of support that I got from that team changed my career. And it was honestly why I was able to ski through 2022. But like they would help with like travel expenses and stuff like that. And it was an incredible, incredible system and family to be a part of. And I was able to approach my athletic career with a much, I was able to do whatever it took, essentially. Like, I had the resources to do what it took to, like, get to that level, and I definitely saw some huge improvements over the next several years, along with my teammate Ben, while keeping some options open in life as well. So we were on that team for a couple of years. We had a pretty solid like core team through those couple of years after summer. And then obviously COVID happened and we had to deal with everything that went with that and like less travel and an incredible amount of restrictions and an unreasonable amount of COVID tests. And then we, when I made the 2022 Olympic team, that one was almost more special than the first one because I was also representing everyone in the armed forces and the Army specifically. Like, that one meant a lot to me. To be able to do that with Ben, who, like, we'd been through quite a bit together at that point. So that was a pretty cool experience too.
And then, no. Are you still okay? Let me back up. So you're still involved with the Army, is that right?
And yeah, I'm in the Army National Guard here in Utah. So
okay.
It's not I'm not full time Army. I'm more of like a part time service.
So you said you enlisted. This is in like 2019 after the first Olympics. You enlisted, then you had to get a job in the Army.
Yeah, because you can't just like enlist in the Army and not have it. Like, you have to do something in the Army.
So what'd you do? What was your
job? De-enlisted is truck drivers, actually.
Truck drivers?
Yeah. We chose the thing with when we enlisted is like we had this team, that athlete team in mind already. So like we weren't really going to be doing this job all that much. Like, we went to the job training for it and graduated that just fine. And then we maybe did it for 2 months here in Utah before we got on the athlete team. And then once you're on the athlete team, they like take you and like you're part of them and like your job is to be an athlete. So like,
got it.
I haven't done truck driving stuff since that year that we enlisted. It was more of like we chose that because it was quick training so we could get back to like our sport.
So, you know, but you did continue to do trainings with the military from time to time or have, So what skills did you learn from the military that you think actually helped advance your athletic or just personal life?
I think the biggest thing that I got from my military career was discipline, and like a willingness to do whatever it takes and just like a different outlook on things, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, the biggest one is discipline and like having everything in order, if that makes sense. Not really like flying by the seat of your pants kind of mentality. Like, I definitely had everything dialed after that and like figured out all of my best practices instead of just like rolling with it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, the military is all about having a group, right? Having a team environment, and everybody has to pull their weight. And that's a little different than the sport you were in, which is an individual sport for the most part, right? Yeah, you're not. So those, I could see how that that would actually be kind of fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. And I will say, like, as much as our team and sport is an individual sport, we were very much a team. Like, yes, at the end of the day, some days we were like duking it out with each other, but like we were very much this like tight knit group of team that like essentially was family with the amount of time we spend together. Cause we did some team events here and there. Not a ton, but like, yeah, we definitely were a family, I'd say.
Well, and you've mentioned a few times, like your mentors, your coaches, the people that you choose to surround yourself with are really important and have been very influential. And I've always felt like everybody is, when they hit a point in their adult life where they're having a career, you build your own like board of advisors, right? And so when you need help with something, you know you're going to call that person. When you need help with something different, relationships or, you know, whatever, you've got all these experts that are kind of in your circle. Do you want to shout out any of your coaches or mentors?
I don't think I should shout. The list would be too long and I would probably like miss someone and realize 5 minutes after, like, oh my God, I didn't.
It's like your Oscars.
They all know who they are. So like, I love you all, but like, I don't want to go into the list.
Yeah, no, I get it. I do get it. But you know, the point is that that's always been really important to you, that you're not flying alone out there.
Yep. Yes, very much so.
Okay. So, another question that, you know, my little group wanted to know about is, what the heck do you do in off season training?
In our sport, we would get like 2 weeks to do whatever you want. Like, don't really need to exercise, like go alpine skiing, and don't need to do like that much. And then we pretty much would dive back into it. It wasn't very like strict and structured for the first like month or so. It was more about like hitting endurance hours and like getting into the gym, like maintaining your mobility, flexibility, and that kind of stuff. But I was, the more and more my career progressed, I became a bigger fan of cross training. And like, that's where I found a lot of the joy in the long hours of the training season. So like I got super into like backcountry skiing and mountain biking and trail running, all that kind of stuff. And like yoga was a huge help for me on the ski jumping side of things in terms of like mobility and functional fitness and functional strength. So I like would say cross training, definitely was like a huge, huge thing for me the more my career progressed.
I mean, that's huge for sure. And those are all things that you can take forward through your whole life. You know, ski jumping, it may not be as accessible for your whole life.
Yeah.
But yoga and mountain biking and backcountry, I mean, that's all the fun stuff too. And so your off season, you get to work your body in different ways, but still have fun.
Exactly.
I think I mentioned this to you, but our sponsor for the show is Honey Stinger. And I have not talked to one of our Olympic level athletes about their nutrition. You happen to be a Honey Stinger athlete, or you were in your super competitive time. What do you think about Honey Stinger? So let's talk about sports nutrition a little bit and how you used that product.
Yeah, I was a Honey Stinger actually sponsored me for my entire athletic career. This like entire national team career, and started with me a couple years before I even made the national team. So I'm a huge fan of Honey Stinger, and I've used pretty much all of their products in all of the iterations that they have. But I went through different phases of everything. But one thing that I always say to stayed a staple for me was the gels. I always used to use those like about 10 to 15 minutes right before my cross country race started. I would have one of those. Just as that extra little like booster before I got things going. I would use it during like longer endurance depth days where like you're building the base hours, like the 3+ hour days where you're like out there for a long time. And I don't know, you're like bonking in the woods and you're like, oh man, like I don't want to be doing this anymore. You get a little hit of that gel and you're good to go for the rest of the next little break. But yeah, they're a lifesaver.
And it's so true, because it's your mood that changes too. Like you get all crabby and then you have a caffeinated gel and suddenly you're like giddy and you could go for 2 more hours.
Yep.
Yeah, it's cool. It's funny because, you know, the gels for young kids, that's not usually like a big option. They go more for like the little chews and the waffles and stuff. But as you get older, I still use gels. I use them sometimes in a business work day when I don't have time and I need the boost, because I feel like, and maybe it's psychological, but I feel like they hit your bloodstream faster. They have a quicker acting effect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if that's just, I'm convinced that that's what happens, but like a lot of it with nutrition and like that type of thing, it's like if you believe it, then your mind is going to react that way. So
I know, it's so true. Well, and you know, this goes into the next topic. Well, wait, before we go there, let's give a final shout out to Honey Stinger, our amazing sponsor. You can get on their website and use the discount SSWSC podcast for 20% off. And they are amazing, awesome, and based right here in Steamboat Springs. So make sure you hit them up and support them, just like they support all of our amazing, not all of them, but most of our amazing athletes who come out of this town. You know, if we're on the subject of nutrition in general, you're like a finely tuned machine, right? And now you're in retirement. You're probably all flabby and like you're not doing anything anymore. Well, whatever. But we're about to get there. But as you were racing and training, did you like, was nutrition a big focus for you, or did you just eat what you wanted?
I think that like all through my career in Steamboat and like up until my first year on the national team, I kind of just rolled with it. I grew up in like a healthy household in terms of like nutrition and that type of thing. So I was super fortunate in that regard. But ski jumping and Nordic combined is one of those where like you can't just wing it in terms of nutrition, because like you have to be so dialed in terms of like being at the right weight for ski jumping, but also like being strong at that weight for the cross country side of things. So like, I definitely worked with a handful of nutritionists and had to like figure it out what worked best for me. And there's no golden ticket of like, I can't tell you this is how you should eat to be the best Nordic combined skier, because literally each of my teammates, we all did it differently and we all figured it out for ourselves. But finding those nutritionists and people that could help me dial it in and like work through the like ups and downs of figuring it out was like super helpful. But you definitely like, you got to take care of it.
Yeah, it's tough because mostly it's in the world of women athletes and women in general where they talk about like eating disorders, which can even include just like thinking about food too much is basically an eating disorder. I, of course, was researching you and I was on your wiki page and it's like, he's 6'2", 160. And I was like, whoa, that's got to be hard to maintain, you know? Yeah. And I wonder if there's just, if you have any thoughts on like how to do this whole athletic nutrition thing in a healthy way that doesn't lead you down a road of, you know, obsessing about food and eating.
Yeah, I think I would say like find your mentors and your people and utilize them. The two people that I would recommend in order to help in terms of that is a sports psychologist and a nutritionist. Because the sports psychologist is going to help make sure your brain is looking at the right way. And the nutritionist is going to help make sure that you're actually eating what you need to be eating. So I don't have the golden ticket, but those two will help you figure it out.
Well, I think your message is you need to take it seriously. And everyone is we're all individual. So your plan is going to be custom. So you've got to figure it out on your own. And that's okay to know. We've all got to do it.
And it's not like you have to like go to do a deep dive search in the internet and like figure it out on your own that way. It's more like find your mentors or your people and have them help you. But like what I mean by on your own is like it's going to be an individualized plan.
Yes.
You're not by yourself.
Yeah, that makes sense. Totally. Okay, I want to talk about retirement. So I actually read this great article about you and the Steamboat Pilot. I'll put a link in the show notes. It was right after you retired, but... you said, yeah, do you remember doing that?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, you said in the article, I came to this decision on my own terms and my own timeline. And I personally know that just talking about retiring from a sport that you love can cause anxiety and all kinds of other feelings. Yet, when you're a pro athlete, you also know that this can't last forever while you're doing it. So you're trying to enjoy it, knowing that it won't last forever. And most athletes, like, there is no magic to when they just say, I'm done, you know, and announcing a retirement adds a little layer of finality. I mean, some athletes come out of retirement multiple times. But how and when did you see the end coming?
I saw the end coming immediately following the 22 Olympics. I proceeded to not retire until the following year. But I definitely was like heading that direction after the China Olympics. That was like a pretty, tough year. I had a great time and amazing, but like, it was definitely a challenge. Like, it was a challenge. It's just a lot of effort and like takes a lot of sacrifices and the whole shebang, and it was absolutely worth it. I wouldn't change that in any way, but I just started to look at it and see, like, I don't know if I'm prepared to continue doing this in order, like, I don't know if I'm still willing to do whatever it takes, and in order to be at that level you need to be willing to do whatever it takes. And I'm really glad that I skied that last year, and I can attribute a lot of that to one of my coaches essentially convincing me. But I refound the love for the sport that year, and like why I fell in love with the sport and the training and my team and all that fun stuff. And that's why I was able to finish off that year. And I actually like got to a point in the season. I didn't even finish the season. I got like halfway through and was like, you know what? Like, I'm good. I don't need to do any more comps. I'm ready to go home. Like, I'm ready to go. Which I'm so fortunate it worked out that way, because that's extremely rare.
I mean, did you, when you kind of made an announcement. You're at an athletic. A lot of people don't even have to say anything. They can just be done.
Yeah.
Just be done. Move on. You felt like you need to make an announcement. You need to kind of put it out there. How did that feel?
It was emotional. Like, it's definitely like, I was so excited to be retired and like move on to what's next. But all this at the same time, like, that had been my life for the last decade. So like, that was weird. It was very weird moving on, and it's been very weird, like, changing my lifestyle. But I don't know. I had so much support from Steamboat and my circle of people in my network that I'd shared my career with a lot of people. And I would say that, like, I owe a ton of my success to the people that supported me. And I think that, like, the finality of that deserves some recognition also. And that's why I like, felt the need to do an announcement and do the exit right, because I definitely, like, was extremely grateful for what everyone was able to help me do.
Definitely comes through. So what are you doing now? What was next?
I decided to go back to school, actually. I'd done some, like, college on and off during school or during my skiing career, but I was never quite full-time, and I was never very invested in it. I'm currently at school at the University of Utah getting my degree in accounting. And then I'm still in the Utah's National Guard. So I'm continuing a career in that as well.
So what does your future look like?
I'll probably be here in Utah for a while. I actually will be, I'll stay in the National Guard for a while as well. And, the most fun I've had actually is, like, being able to ski as much as I want and, like, I don't know, just not having as much strictness. Like, I definitely still exercise about as much as definitely not as much as I used to, but it looks different. Like, it's not like you got to wake up every day and, like, all right, today's, like, we're going to do some long distance today, or, like, today's interval day, but, like, I don't do intervals anymore, that's for sure. But I definitely, like, if you wake up one day and you're like, oh, I want to go hammer, like, you can just go out and do that. Or, like, if you want to, like, just go ski lifts, then you do that also. Or if you don't want to do anything, that's fine too. And I think that was a weird transition for sure, but it's been fun also.
Well, yeah, I mean, you came from a life that was totally structured by the day, you know, probably on a weekly schedule for 10 years. You know, yep. Mondays are this, Tuesdays are this. So it does take a little time to relax your mindset about all of that. Yeah. And I think it's, you just seem to have a really good energy about where you are. So yep. I applaud yep. you for this transition. You know, at the end of the day, you did something magical. And many people, you know, have that magic in them, and they never find the thing that could have brought them to their Olympics, whatever that means.
Right, right.
Do you think that there was anything else out there that you would have been great at? Now looking back, you're like, dang it, I wish I would have been introduced to this earlier.
Oh, I don't know. There's always so many what ifs in life. It's hard to, like, look back on things like that. I definitely, there's not a single athlete out there that doesn't look back at their career and thinks, like, well, what if I'd done this? Like, I could have been, like, this good or that kind of thing. But I try not to look back and, like, question the what ifs. So I don't necessarily have things like that. It's more of, like, what I'm excited to do in the future and that kind of thing. So I try to be more forward looking.
Yeah, for sure. Are there any sports or other fun adventures you definitely have on your bucket list?
Oh, yeah, I've definitely got a list of things that I've started to tick off that, like, never fit in with the training plan, but I definitely enjoy testing my body and, like, seeing what I'm capable of. And a lot of those things that I was not really able to do so much while I was skiing, whether it was just, like, time of year, you're out of town, it would be very detrimental to training. And, like, doing that kind of stuff has been pretty fun.
Cool. Well, you'll have to keep us posted. Personally, I learned how to surf when I was 45, and I'm terrible at it, but I love it, and I'll keep going back.
Yep.
So those are the fun things that you can you can try any time in life with your athletic fitness level.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've wanted to ride the White Room Trail by myself for like years and years, but like the best time to do it's typically like in the spring or the fall, and it just never quite lined up that well with like training and that type of thing. And I finally was able to tick that off the list this fall. So it's stuff like that where I like some little thing where I like, I'm like, I wonder how I could handle myself during doing that. Is I got a lot of those on my list.
Well, it's interesting too. As we're winding down here, you know, you lived for a decade in an ultra competitive world, with an ultra competitive mindset. And then, you know, you're constantly facing those pressures. What has happened to your competitive drive? Do you still have a competitive drive, or is everything a little more for fun now?
It's different now. You're not going to get to that point in a competitive like sport and not like, I'm going to have a competitive bone in my body for the rest of my life. I play in a like adult soccer league here in Utah, and that's how I get my like competitive juices out every week, which is pretty fun. But in terms of like most of my athletic stuff now, that I'm more like competing against myself. Like I don't really care about races anymore, if that makes sense, at least as of right now. But I'm more interested in like seeing how much I can push myself and like what I'm capable of, if that makes sense. Like how long I can be able to run, or like how much vert I can do, or like how fast I can do the White Room Trail, and if I can do it by myself unsupported. And I was like, gotta find out. I'm competing against myself now. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what a great wide world that's open to you now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've kept you for quite a while. I think it's time to wind it down. I'm going to ask you the final question we ask every guest that comes on the show. And that is, what is the greatest lesson you've learned through sport?
I think it's maybe two things. One is discipline, and like understanding what it takes to be disciplined and what you can get out of being disciplined. I would not have gotten to where I did without that. And I guess the second one sort of plays right into that, but utilizing your team and your network is essential to be, like, it's a necessary part to be successful in life. I don't care if you're in business or in sport or just raising a family, like you need your people. And whether it's like, oh, I got a guide that I can call to do that, or it's like someone where you're like, I need advice on this. If you gather your team and actually use like the resources that they have and the knowledge that they have, like you don't need to be knowledgeable in everything. You just need to like have someone that is knowledgeable in that you can go to and be like, I got to figure this out. Like you got to help. So using your network.
You know, those are incredible pieces of advice or lessons. And I think the club probably played a big role in instilling or creating the foundation for both of those, which is cool. Yep. The other thing that really comes to mind is that you're in such a unique position now to be that mentor, to be a guide for others who are coming up, whether it's in your same sport or other things in life. You've learned a lot, and you're taking it forward with a really positive mindset. So thank you so much for everything. It's been a pleasure to chat with you today.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right, now get out there and get some White Room training going.
Exactly. All right, thanks. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. Check out the club's winter and summer programs at sswsc.org. If you have a special topic or guest you want featured, we'd love to hear from you. Now get out there and support, lead, or be a champion on or off the mountain.